Free School Wednesdays at noon on CFMU.
I'm David Suzuki, speaking on CFMU FM 93.3.
SUVs, you know, if you drive an SUV, you're putting out twice as much as you could be if you were driving another vehicle, and people make choices.
And then when we stop breathing the clean air, we're all going to die.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Brian McCary. I'm the chair of Clean Air Hamilton, which is a multi-stakeholder group here in Hamilton that cares about air quality. I'm also on the board of directors of the Bay Area Restoration Council, which is the group responsible for overseeing the remediation of Hamilton Harbor. In my spare time, I'm a professor of chemistry here at McMaster, and I hold the Stephen A. Jaruzelski Chair in Environment and Health. Smog is a complex mixture of chemicals, or the result of the complex mixture of reactions that take place in the air. So you have emissions of compounds from natural sources like plants, the waxes, the like, which have been going on for many years. But you also have, in urban areas, you have the releases of things like oxides of nitrogen from combustion emissions, from whether it's industrial or from cars and trucks. These things all get spewed out. You get light interacting with these chemicals, and you get lots of complex reactions going on. And one of the products of this is ozone. You get oxides of nitrogen converting to various things. They interact with the organic compounds in, again, another variety of complex reactions. Ultimately, you produce particles because the oxides of sulfur and nitrogen become nitric acid, nitrate salts, and sulfate salts, and they form particles about 2 microns, which is about 20 times smaller than the hair diameter. That's what causes the haziness over the city. You get lots of other organic compounds that are transformation products of these things, so it's just this soup and this vicious cycle. And one of the main products is ozone. And the byproduct ozone is not the stuff that's up in the stratosphere, but it's the stuff that's called ground-level ozone. And the main thing that trips off the smog events locally is not locally generated smog, but stuff that's blown in from the Ohio Valley primarily. Power plants, the cities of... So that's coming up 500-600 miles. It's had nice time to bake in the sun. The number one trip for the air quality index is ozone. So like today, we're having a fairly high ozone event. And in fact, some of the areas that get the highest ozone aren't the urban areas. They're places like Kitchener or out in Muskoka. Even Parry Sound gets the ozone alerts, not because anybody in Parry Sound is generating the ozone or emitting the stuff that creates the ozone. It's come up from other places. The result of our urban lifestyle is that we're creating emissions that result in ozone that don't just affect us. So here in Hamilton, we're producing emissions that don't impact us very much, but do impact Oakville, Toronto, etc. Toronto's making stuff that impacts on Peterborough. It follows the pattern of the wind. So one of the things that we found in the air quality study, it was published 5 years ago, where in Hamilton we took a lot of local air quality data and sort of said, what's it all mean? And we came up with health effects predictions. But one of the things that came up was that in the previous 10 years, the population of Ontario had increased about 8-9%, but the number of miles driven had gone up 75%. And that's continuing. People are moving farther away from central cities. They're not taking transit because they don't feel it's available, or they've moved to a place where it's not. They now have 2 cars. They live in Hamilton, have a job. All of a sudden, that job collapses. They take a job in Thornhill. It's happening all over. So the numbers of car miles driven and truck miles driven has gone way up. The move to just-in-time delivery for industry now means that less rail traffic, and so now you have these effectively moving warehouses of trucks driving up and down the 401. There was a prediction about a year and a half ago that the NAFTA truck traffic's doubling every 5 years. There's this increased reliance on automobile and truck traffic. If you go to cities like Toronto or London or Ottawa, their ozone and oxide nitrogen levels are rising year by year. So Hamilton has kept pretty much steady state. In fact, it's actually been decreasing somewhat, but other cities are increasing much more dramatically. So we've made some inroads here mostly by curbing the industries, and they've gone along with that. The growth here hasn't been as big in terms of new population. But those are the big drivers, and it doesn't matter where you are. So it's our lifestyle. SUVs, if you drive an SUV, you're putting out twice as much as you could be if you were driving another vehicle, and people make choices. Well, one of the things that we've been concerned about in the Air Quality Initiative is just what is the effect on health of people. It was only about 10 years ago that people really put together the linkage between outdoor air quality, and health. Initially, it was felt to be just particles, and it was just going to be respiratory effects. Now it's known that the gases, the ozone, the oxides, the nitrogen, the sulfur oxides, even carbon monoxide have impacts. But it goes beyond just respiratory effects. It's now very much implicated in cardiovascular disease. And that may end up being one of the biggest burdens. So you get people who are not only impacted and show up at the hospital with increased respiratory cardiovascular problems, but people actually die of this. So we've documented those numbers. So we're looking at 300, 350, 400 people per annum die prematurely in Hamilton as a result of the air quality. And that's pretty typical across North America and in the urban centers. So there's a very large burden of health based on the impacts of air quality. And that's one of the things that's relatively new in the scientific literature, but there's been so many studies now that it's all pointing the same direction. Initially, industry some industry groups came out and said, this is all a bunch of hogwash, don't believe this. But they've reanalyzed this data over and over and over again and have looked at all the possible confounders. And while it's a statistically based approach, the direction it's pointing is correct. So the studies in Europe, the studies elsewhere, have all shown the same thing.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Yes, there are monitors measuring stuff. So they're measuring particles, they're measuring ozone, sulfur oxides. The criticism has come in two ways. Number one, that in the case of the air quality index, when it gets tripped locally, it's primarily due not... It could be any one of particles or ozone or SO2, sulfur dioxide, that is. But usually it's the ozone, so it defaults to one of them, and they don't add up the contributions of the other things. So it's not... And I think the whole is equal to the sum of the parts, as opposed to being one part, the majority of the whole. So the health effects-based people look at it and say, well, we know that the effects of ozone add on to those of particles, add on to those of SO2, oxides of nitrogen, etc. So why don't we roll that together? And in fact, why don't we have a health-based thing based on the rolling and evolving epidemiology that we're seeing, which is now focusing very much on pretty much a one picture. I mean, not all the numbers agree exactly, but the direction's all the same. Why don't we use that? And I think the government agencies are less likely to move in those directions very quickly. Health Canada has now recognized this, and I think is pushing very hard for the government to go that way. One of the things they did push for is this 30 part per million sulfur content in fuels, primarily because we want to reduce from 350 down to about 30, because that is mainly in diesel fuel, and they wanted to reduce the sulfur oxide burden. Sulfur oxides become particles, the particles cause problems. So, and that was fought fairly tenaciously by the oil industry, but now that's all settled, there's a timetable in place. Some people feel it's too slow, but that's what... So there are people who argue that the health effects of air pollution should be part of the package of monitoring it, and there should be a way of giving warnings on those bases. That sort of happened. Now, we've been active in putting together a smog notification program, which is now, I'm glad to see, settling in not only in locally, but also across the country. So there are now warnings on the news. Tomorrow's probably going to be a bad day, so plan your life accordingly. Take a bus, carpool, stay at home and work at home, whatever. Don't run your gas lawnmowers, things like that. Things, if you look back at the records, certainly in Hamilton, the particulate loadings have decreased substantially from, say, the 60s and the 70s, when the steel mills really were putting out a lot of stuff. They're still putting out stuff, but they're putting out a lot less than they used to. I think the ozone burdens are less because the numbers of people and the power plants are... But it's hard to get numbers. We don't have as much data as we used to have. So I think things are getting better, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't make it a lot better. I can remember being in Los Angeles in the early 70s and being in Pasadena and being able to see a block and a half at the most before everything faded into a haze. You got to remember there's parts of the world, China and India, Thailand, where that kind of situation exists today, and people live in these environments that don't change. I think the big difference also is that the number of targets that one would have to clean up is much greater. It's not like the sulfur oxide problem and the acid rain problem of Sudbury, where it was effectively cap off or deal with Falcon Bridge and Inco, and you've really done a lot of control the problem. Now it's very broad spread. It's not just industry. It's cars and trucks. Wood smoke, actually a big thing. Wood fires are very much a particulate and byproduct producer. So if you've got a really modern wood stove, no problem. But if you're just burning an open fireplace, you're a real polluter, it turns out. The governments at the federal level, the provincial level, and down to the municipal level have to start doing something about public transit. That's really the only thing that will really make a big, big difference. As well as there could be, I wouldn't say mandated vehicle emissions. California is trying to do that right now and is running into they've always been the leader, but they're running into another very large roadblock of the major companies because they want to have really tight, stringent standards on cars sold in California. And that may happen. But there are cars that are really low producers, the Honda Insight and these hybrid cars or just highly efficient cars. If people make those kinds of choices, they could tax these large producer cars, the Lincoln Navigator, to pick on one big SUV, for example. That's done in Europe. They've done that for many years. You simply pay a lot more tax on your car and your license every year. So there's incentives like that can be done. There's also a lot of stuff that can be done just in terms of re-engineering how our buildings work, so-called green building. Canada is really very much behind the eight ball. The Europeans are leading this charge. The Americans are starting to catch up, but we're very much in the dark. There's a few companies doing things. But you can re-engineer buildings and be 30 to 40% more efficient. So that would help us get a long way toward Kyoto. So there's a lot of technology to make a big difference is out there. There's going to be new technologies coming along, but it's more of a matter of will of people wanting to do that. There's also things related to urban sprawl. I mean, if you set up the government such that you encourage people to sprawl all over the place, then they're going to do that, and that's going to mean they're going to drive farther and farther. We can't change the economics of the country, but you can certainly, all you do is fly over any European country and you'll see very compact towns or cities, and then fields start immediately. That doesn't happen here. Things kind of just dwindle out. There's going to be a lot of lifestyle shifts to make big changes. There is a direct link between climate change and air quality, because a lot of the air quality stuff is combustion emissions. And if you cut those down, you cut down the things that make for poor air quality. And if you cut those down, you're also going to be cutting down mostly carbon dioxide emissions, because they're almost concomitant. So that would make a big improvement. So if you did have a 30% reduction in overall total CO2 emissions, for example, there would be probably a direct decrease in the amount of other things. These highly efficient cars also produce a lot less oxides of nitrogen as well. So just per mile driven, not only are they producing less CO2, but they're also producing less of the contaminants that are a main burden. Lower the sulfur in fuel, you've got the sulfur problem. I wouldn't say licked, but you cut down quite a bit. Diesel engines are still a problem. The trouble is diesel engines are very efficient. They're more efficient than gasoline engines, so they're still useful for a lot of reasons. But controlling and coming up with technologies to get the particulate loading down, which is terrible, and the oxide of nitrogen is a real tough problem. Mm-hmm. People are looking at this, but there's no easy solution. It would have been found by now. Running on vegetable oil, it sounds sort of organic, but it really doesn't make a difference. You can run a diesel on almost anything. it's still going to be producing just as much particulate material and oxide and nitrogen because it's the function of the fuel and the function of the nature of the combustion process in the engine. It's high temperature, high compression pressures, and then temperatures of combustion. There isn't a clean diesel, unfortunately. We're really pleased and proud of the Air Quality Initiative here. It was a group of mostly academics, industrial folks, people in government, and just local citizens that got together in Hamilton to try to understand the air quality, understand what difference you could make. So you really have to understand what's going on before you can make suggestions about changes. And we also were concerned about the air quality impacts. So we've continued to move in these directions, and there's a self-monitoring network that's going to be set up that we're sort of coordinating for the industries that are now taking over a responsibility for their own monitoring with the Ministry of the Environment. But the interesting thing about Hamilton is that it's large enough to be a city that has problems, which is one issue, but it's also small enough to where people get together and talk to each other. And there's enough local expertise, both from health science areas into the sampling and monitoring and engineering issues, and people are prepared to work in a community way to understand what's going on. So we were the first group that actually took the then emerging epidemiology and apply it to a health assessment of local air quality. Normally, you have to understand, you need a population base of at least 10 and hopefully 20 million people to be able to get enough data to be able to really see the effects. So in a city of Hamilton's size of 500,000, you can never see that. But you can take the epidemiology data and risk factors and apply them locally, saying this is what we've got. So about 2 years ago, the Ontario Medical Association, they now have a website, you can go to that, and you can actually calculate locally using the same formulas that we used. So people can be more, if you like, empowered to be able to go look up, know what their air quality is, and actually calculate their risk factors and get an idea of the levels of impacts locally. So that's the kind of thing people need to know, because until you come to grips with the fact that air quality is really having a major effect on a lot of people, mostly the very young and the elderly, then until you see that in your own community, you don't really notice it. And the trouble is that the people who are having these problems aren't walking down the street and then just, you know, collapsing. They're in their homes, and, you know, they're elderly mostly or very young, and they have all these difficulties, and it's just a blip in the stats. So, but it's real, and what this has effect in the long term, we don't really know. But there's clearly immunological issues, there's cardiovascular as well as usual respiratory problems. And the medical community is just now beginning to get a grip on that too. So I've talked to some of the doctors, and they're all very interested, but they don't really tie these together. They tie together other kinds of things, like smoking, for example. Everybody recognizes that smoking cigarettes isn't good for you. But breathing a lot of disgusting air is not so good.
My name is Kevin Hamilton, and I'm with an organization called Cycling for Sustainability Association. Since we're in Southern Ontario, we're cycling for sustainability, so the big issue is clean air. And if anybody in Southern Ontario looks up, they can obviously tell there's a problem with clean air. So we're doing a critical mass ride, and we're signing petitions urging our government to ratify Kyoto before the Earth Summit, which is in September. And then we plan on dressing up and having kind of a festive atmosphere down Lakeshore, and we'll be taking our message to Queen's Park. We're planning to have a die-in. The one idea was one of the cyclists has like a tank on the back of her bike that's an oxygen tank, and we all have hoses attached to it, and we're going to be breathing air, and then when we stop breathing the clean air, we're all going to die and cough and fall. And then I'm making a defibrillator, and we're going to revive each other and bring them back to life and have more oxygen. Some people are going to dress up like animals that are affected from climate change, and we're going to have masks as well, so when drivers go by us, they can kind of stop and think, hopefully. And yeah, we're just going to gently be loud and ring our bells and probably hand out some more flyers about smog and its effects, and you know, promoting sustainable lifestyles and alternatives to the car culture that we are currently in.
Got struck by the first volley of the war in the core. Never held my soul. Send him a wire, give him my best. His ammunition never rests. No one serves coffee, no one wakes up. Nothing gets me off so completely that when you put it down, 10 feet down in the ground, call it response, negative home.
Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learners.
They're yummy. Yummy is eat what? everything that's bad, and they don't eat bikes, they don't eat people walking, they eat cars. They don't want it them to pollute.
Who invented yum ears?
Me. I'm 4, and my name is Madeline. They just put their mouth on the road, and then the car goes straight. The cars go straight into its mouth, and then they close it and swallow it. And sometimes they can eat all the cars at the same time. Well, you have to stop the car quickly and get out of the car quickly and run away. And you have to stop using the car too much. Well, the vids that are Yummy's friends, they wear blue jackets and have white hair. And they wear yellow pants. They wear kind of pants for their shoes. This is how the Yummy's dress. Yummy's dress and puzzles and books. Whatever books that it's Pokemon. They rip all the pages out. Rip the pages up and put all the Pokemon pieces on their body. And then they wear pants for their jackets and wear for their pants a t-shirt. And Yummy's have red hair, purple, actually different color hair. Yummy doesn't eat buses because they know that buses aren't good. And they know that they can say hi to the bus driver. I've invented Mr. Smelly. He eats trucks. Mr. Smelly eats trucks. He's this kind of guy. Evan knows all about him.
Yummy's are funny. They eat cars. And also there's Mr. Smelly. He's not a bum. He eats trucks. He makes them smelly, and he makes cars stink for the Yummy's. Have you ever seen him eat in a truck? I have. There's a huge mouth opens, and then the truck goes down a throat. And Yummy's eat the cars, and we gulp the car. The cars slither down their throat. They're very funny. You ought to see them.
Anyway.
Bye. Who's willing to try? Yeah, to save our world. Yeah, save our sweet world. Save a world that is destined to die.
Radio Free School, Stop Breathing, featured interview with Brian McCary of Clean Air Hamilton, Kevin Hamilton of Cycle for Sustainability, music Stop Breathing by Pavement from Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain, There's Something Going On by The Roots on their album Do You Want More, and Save the Children by Marvin Gaye from the album What's Going On, Tech Randy Kay. Join us every Wednesday at 12 noon to 12:30 p.m. on CFMU 93.3 FM.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.